you hear that bass drop, you know what that means. It's time for DLC, your downloadable content for the week. DLC delivered the way it's meant to be, completely free. And that's thanks to our sponsor this week, MailChimp, for making that possible. DLC is the show all about gaming in its many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, and also games that involve dice, luck, and cardboard. I am your host, Jeff 2N1T Kanata, and I'm joined, as always, by my friend, slash co-host, slash nemesis, the man who just celebrated his second Father's Day ever, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello. I've celebrated many Father's Days. This is my second as a father myself.
Oh, I see what you did there. Yeah. No, you've celebrated your dad, but you're now celebrating as a dad.
Right. The best part about being a parent is you get an extra holiday a year.
That's pretty cool. Well, DLC, of course, your downloadable Kanata, your downloadable Christian. This week, unfortunately, DLC stands for dealing with a lingering cold, because I am hit with the confluenza, unfortunately. But never fear, because we have a very special guest to help me get through this one. Our pal, video game expert, making his official entry into the DLC Five Timers Club. It's the one, the only, Mr. Garnett Lee. Hello, Garnett.
5x5x5.
There you go. That's what the patch on your smoking jacket will say when it gets delivered.
Root type 5x5. I just hope there's not an alien behind me.
Well, we have all survived E3 week. I have barely survived it, as you can probably tell by my voice. Hopefully all of you listen to our daily live episodes. If not, check that feed, 5x5.tv/DLC. You'll see Monday through Friday, we did shows talking all about E3. And we're going to continue talking a little bit about it, but there's some interesting post-show news as well. So let's get right to Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week, it's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week, of course, the segment of the show where we try to convince one another the most important story that happened this week. I don't really know how we're going to parse it this time, because Story of the Week is kind of E3 as a whole. But as I said, there's some stuff that happened since then, and there's some interesting news stories that are kind of filtering out that happened during the show that got kind of drowned out by all the noise and hubbub of all the new releases and new hands-on information. So, Garnett, I'm curious, what do you think the story of the week this week is?
Are you kidding me? I feel like I'm bogarting the real story of the week by taking the Destiny Alpha. It's like the low-hanging fruit of story of the week.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the fact that everybody got hands-on, that's a pretty cool E3 announcement. Is not only is this game coming out this year, but hey, everybody go play it.
Yeah, I think it allowed them to have a much more measurable impact than really almost anything else during the week of E3. It was sort of a perfect timing, great, very well-engineered plan, perfect storm side of, sort of approach here, because you had all of the conversations during E3, so many games, so many things shown, and then riding right on that high, everyone with a PS4 goes into the weekend and plays Destiny, and the response was so very strong. I lost count of how many people said, you know what, like Destiny was something I knew about, and I knew it was the Halo team, and I was interested in all that, but now I have it downloaded. That's why it's the story of the week, is because it had such a tremendous impact on where that game was standing in so many people's minds.
Yeah, so I guess game alphas and game betas are the new game demos, right? It's actually a marketing tool now at this point. It's not just, hey, a stress test, although it does seem like Bungie was doing legitimate stress testing. But it's also a way to get the word out on the game. And when companies are real confident about their game, it's a way to get them into gamers' hands and give them a taste before the game actually drops.
Yeah, I wouldn't misconstrue that too much. I mean, I think what it is that in a good, you know, overview situation of game production, there are folks now who are able to look at those milestone components and say, hey, we could use this as well once we have, you know, certified it and felt that it is capable of, you know, something that we feel comfortable about putting out there in front of people. I would say that, you know, this terming this an alpha, I mean, it really depends on, you know, whose house you're working in. But typically an alpha does not have so many completed assets inside of it. You know, I mean, an alpha is, you know, start to finish, full experience, all features included, with, you know, tremendous numbers usually of placeholders and work in progress stuff, versus beta, which is, you know, when you're at the finish line and you're just trying to get things refined and the final wrapper put on it. So
it does,
you know,
seem like these terms have lost all meaning at this point.
What I'm saying is, I think that there's an internal developer language where alpha means one thing, and then there's another language where you're talking about, oh, I'm putting alpha out in front of you know, the audience and people, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think we can blame, if there's blame to be laid, I think we can lay blame at the feet of Google and, you know, companies that put out betas, quote unquote betas, of finished products for years and years and years. And it's like, yeah, it's still a beta. It's like, well, okay, well, if that's a beta, then we got to have something earlier than that. So I guess alpha is the new actually beta. But, you know, at some point it's just, it all loses its meaning, to me at least. Anyway, I'm excited to hear what you guys thought of that. We're going to talk in the playlist about your firsthand impressions. I, unfortunately, as soon as E3 ended, I was on a plane to Wisconsin for a family wedding and have been away from my PS4 the entire period of the alpha. So I was really bummed to miss that out, but I'm excited to hear what you guys think about it later in the show. But yeah, I can definitely agree that that was a major, major news item coming out of the show. Christian, what did you think was your story of the week?
My story of the week, and I don't understand all the language behind it, but is this modder finding the quote-unquote better graphics and all the stuff that was in the old E3 demos of Watch Dogs within the PC games files. And according to what I, you know, reading through the GAF posts, I mean, it looks like all of the stuff is in there. Almost all of the shaders and improvements are still in the game, and he only been able to implement some of them into the actual game, but like the dynamic shadows and the headlights and the rain density and NPC density has been increased. And it also, according to some users, who knows, you know, this is hearsay, but it's also makes the game run a little smoother on PC, which seems a little odd that they've made the graphics better and increased the, you know, the stress, quote unquote, that the game would put on a system, but it's also running smoother. But I mean, this kind of seems like a rut row to me, you know, like finding all this stuff in there and being able to unpack it and slowly turn it on, like in terms of the whole game, it's in there for the whole game, not just like a vertical slice or a little portion of the city that they use for the demo. I mean, is this the, you know, the smoking gun that they were trying to get all this stuff into the game to make it look like that E3 demo, and then at some point they weren't able to include it, or it wasn't stable, or, you know, why did they pull the plug on it? But I think it's fascinating that this stuff is still in there and exists in the finished version and is able to be implemented. I love stuff like this. I think that's what makes a PC community so cool.
Yeah, remember, you can submit stories for our Story of the Week segment. This one was submitted on Twitter by @SpaceBob. You can do so by using that hashtag DLCSOTW. That's DLC Story of the Week. Also, we have a subreddit now that was established by Dr. Not So Horrible. Excuse me, Dr. Not So Horrible. As I said, I'm sick. I'm having a hard time speaking and communicating today. But if you go to reddit.com/r/5x5DLC, you've got our whole subreddit set up. A lot of people submitting stories there, which is really fun to see as well. And yeah, this is a very odd story. This is the mystery is why, if it's in there, don't they want us to know that it's in there? I don't understand. If you have the ability to make your game look better, is it some sort of desire for parody on old gen, current gen? Is the idea that if the PC looks that much better than the next gen versions of this game, will people, you know, cry foul as to the power of next gen systems? Are they worried that it won't sell? I don't understand it, to be quite honest, but it's strange that it's in there. It's kind of cool that it's in there. It's cool that now you can download this mod and flip a switch and all of a sudden the game looks, you know, plus 10 to pretty. But what do you think, Garnet?
Oh, I think this is often thing that you find in PC gaming, and so it's sort of one of those trade-off cases. So while at one hand we can say, oh, well, why is it in there and why is it hidden and why do we have to, you know, go around like that? But then on the other hand, it's very easy to see that from a shipping product standpoint, you know, if you are, you know, developing the game, then those things that are hidden like that, they are elements that take an effort as a gamer to go in and find and unlock and get running. And those folks who are capable of doing that will be those folks who, number one, are willing to take that, you know, effort and understand a little better about what they're getting into and might be more understanding also of performance issues that are caused by doing that, instabilities that might be caused by doing that. And they also are most likely to have a gaming machine, you know, of a scale that can handle those sort of improvements. So it's sort of a, you know, it is the quintessential Easter egg, right? It's the thing that's there so that people can go in. So the people who are in the know and know how to do those things can hop in and go take advantage of them.
Right. I think to some extent, sometimes it's work to take them out too. You know, if you're creating code and building, creating this thing and you have these files and then, you know, again, in very layman's terms, turn it off versus going in and removing everything and making sure that in removing that stuff, you're not, you know, breaking something else or ruining some other part of the game that that code might be relying on in some weird way that you don't know about. I think it's interesting, Jeff, you know, your hypothesis that maybe they abandoned that for the entire game because of trying to have console parity. I hadn't thought of that as like, oh, we can't make this look too good. I mean, would people be, in your opinion, Jeff, really upset if the PC version looked like the E3 trailer, but they weren't able to get that on the PS4 and Xbox One version? Would that have fans outraged, or would it just, I mean, as a game maker, why not release the best game possible on each platform? Why you'd have to have parity across all of your platforms?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a strange decision, but there's you never know about the internal politics of these games that are coming out early in the console's releases. I mean, we're seeing strange stuff happening with Ubisoft and the Wii U in the sense of them holding on to games that are finished because they're waiting for a larger install base. I mean, it's a wild kind of pulling out of my butt theory here, but I just can't understand any reason why, if you have that ability in your game, as you said, why not have the prettiest version of your game out there, especially when, you know, they did take a bit of a hit from people going, oh, this was not what was promised as far as comparison to that initial E3 trailer. And if they had a way of making it look that good on really high-end PCs, I don't understand why you wouldn't want to have that functionality included in the final release. It doesn't make any sense. And the only thing I can imagine is that, you know, if this is a real poster child for that next gen experience, maybe there was some worry that, you know, the next gen version of the game wasn't the coolest looking version. I don't know.
Yeah. Or maybe it made like the porting to last gen to 360 and PS3 more difficult if that was in the final build. Like I said, I don't understand real coding at all, but I do think it's fascinating that it's in there. And, you know, I'd love to, if you're a PC gamer and you have Watch Dogs on your PC and you run this, you know, definitely tweet at Jeff or I, and let us know your impressions and if it's running better for you and how much better it looks, because I mean, that's cool. I don't know. I love stuff like that.
Well, and the, you know, the other thing is that I didn't get the PC. I was thinking of getting the PC version when Watch Dogs shipped, and I had read a bunch of early impressions of the PC versions, and people were talking about how bad it looked and how bad it ran. So I went and got the PS4 version instead. And if they were having issues with the PC version running stably, you know, without these kinds of things involved, maybe it was just like a slash and burn to get the game out at the same time as all the other versions to, you know, not have more issues that they couldn't fix pre-launch. I don't know. These are all just sort of grasping at straws theories, but who knows?
Yeah.
Another thing that came out this week, or just the other day, was you know, we saw the big announcement at E3 of GTA 5 coming out on next gen systems, PS4 and Xbox One. No PC version announced, however, which is interesting. But really cool, Digital Foundry did this side by side comparison of the PS3 and PS4 launch trailers, which are very similar trailers. But I would recommend people checking this out. It really shows the huge leap in what GTA 5 is going to look like, in much the same way that we're talking about with Watch Dogs. And you watch that trailer, at least I did, at E3 of GTA 5, and I found myself going, oh yeah, that's pretty much how it looked, I think, on PS3. And then you watch it side by side, and you're like, oh no, wow, they've really pushed it forward. And it looks like there was a lot of care taken, that it wasn't just like a slider that was moved up to put it out on the next-gen systems, that there really does seem to be more geometry, you know, higher-res textures, and lots of really fun tweaks that make the game look really, really pretty. Did you guys get a chance to see this? Garnet, did you get a chance to see this video?
The side-by-side?
Yeah.
I have not watched the side-by-side yet, but I find this to be a very interesting and timely conversation about, you know, this continuing cross-generation period. And I think that it's when you guys have walked through this, then maybe we could also, you know, entertain adding Far Cry to this conversation, because, you know, I think there's a tremendous amount of divided opinion over the upcoming Far Cry based on it being, you know, basically still the last Far Cry engine with some graphical flourishes, but, you know, maybe not being the HDification that GTA is on next gen consoles.
Oh, yeah, I think go ahead, Christian.
Honestly, I think that's an interesting conversation to get into with Destiny also, because, you know, for better or worse, I think Destiny has largely escaped the talk of being a cross-gen title, whereas, you know, I think Titanfall was kind of burdened with that to some extent. We know, oh, the 360 version, when is that coming out, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, Destiny has really held itself out as this, one, PS4 game, and then two, as a current-gen game, but it's also releasing on PS3 and Xbox 360, and just from my time in the alpha, I feel like the differences is going to be largely particle effects. Like, there's a lot of dust blowing around and dirt in the air that is really cool and shiny and kind of not distracting in a bad way, but like, ooh, next gen distracting. And I'm curious to see how the last gen version of that. But this side by side, for me, the thing that struck me for the GTA side by side that Digital Foundry put out was, you know, the density of animals. And it seems like the ocean, all those sharks, there's like five or six sharks instead of one. There's where just a forest before, now there's deer kind of running through it, and then like mountain lions and
the
grass.
Roads actually look like LA roads. They're full of cars now.
Right. Yeah. So every
shot
mission
of the freeway actually looks like LA.
You'll never be able to successfully pull off any of the follow missions on the current gen version, because you'll be in traffic.
Right. Realism. LA style. Yeah, no, I think that's awesome. I had hands-on with Far Cry 4 at E3, and I came away feeling like it looked pretty darn good. I mean, it looked like the Far Cry 3 PC version on full settings that I think you mentioned that as well, Christian. But I will say this, at E3, I did notice that the games that were coming sooner, that were cross-gen, there was a marked difference between those and the ones that are farther along and sort of just going to be next gen, but farther out, I should say.
Right. I mean, you can't go from Batman to Far Cry 4 and be like, oh yeah, those are both next gen games.
Well, even Batman, I mean, I'm talking about like, I went to the Dying Light. No.
The Order?
No. Yeah. Well, The Order is an example, but the Dying Light had a very odd behind closed door demo where they said, we want to show you gameplay, and we're going to show gameplay on this prototype 2013 build that we did. And it looks like sort of current gen game, and they, you know, ran around smacking guys. And then they went, okay, please don't judge the game by that, because this is how the game's going to look. And then they showed a version on the current build with the current engine, and it wasn't gameplay anymore. It was just sort of a tour around the environments, and it was unbelievable. I mean, it looked unbelievable, but those kinds of advances are taking longer. And so they had to show us the game from 2013 in playable form. So, but it didn't look anything like any of the games that are coming out in 2014. I mean, it looked painterly and lush, and it really is all about lighting this gen, or at least early on in this gen. The lighting is so dramatic and so interesting and so varied and so dense. So I think that for me was the big signifier of how much of a leap we're going to get in 2015 games from 2014 games.
But then let me ask you, what I really wanted to get to, because this is the conversations that I've heard, is that the bloom is somewhat off the rose of Far Cry. So if you look at Far Cry 3 had a tremendous resurgence for the popularity of that franchise. I mean, Far Cry 2 was good, but man, Far Cry 3 really was a surprise. People were really excited about it. It suddenly had a lot of momentum behind it. So a lot of people then became excited about what Far Cry 4 would be. And then if you go and look at Far Cry 4, I mean, let's not be too, you know, I don't want to be too complimentary. I'm trying to figure out the way to say this. It doesn't really look like a next-gen game. It still is in that space of this is a game that is current, you know, 360 PS3 generation with some things done to make it look better. And some games are better at that than others, and some games are worse than that other, but it really doesn't look like a next-gen game. And so how much does that diminish your excitement and interest? Because a lot of folks I've talked to were like, oh, I was really hoping Far Cry 4 would be a next-gen game, and because it still looks like, I mean, one of the things that stood out for me is like the way things animate. It still has, if you look at the animations and the, you know, the models inside a true next-gen game, they're much more sophisticated than what we've seen in even, you know, the current gen stuff that's been bumped up, Watch Dogs included. So yeah. Does that diminish your love for the game? Because the game is still going to be Far Cry. I mean, obviously they showed an outpost takeover, which is ripped straight out of the sort of play mechanics that people liked in Far Cry 3. The place looks cool. The idea looks cool. But yeah. How much will it impact your take on the game that it is, in fact, still the Far Cry 3 engine, which is now, you know, 2.5-3 years out of date and pushed up as far as it can go?
Well, speaking as somebody that felt like he made a mistake buying Far Cry 3 on 360 instead of buying it on PC, I ended up rebuying it on PC because of how I thought bad, it looked on the 360. Now, if you look at Far Cry 4 playing, which I did, playing on PS4, compared to Far Cry 3 playing on 360, it's night and day. But if you look at Far Cry 4 on PS4 compared to Far Cry 3 on a really high-end PC, it's not that much different. So it depends on what you consider last gen. I mean, if you're talking, I don't think you can even say that Far Cry 3 on those last gen systems looks even remotely as good as Far Cry 4 did on the PS4. But I'm,
no, it
and
doesn't
I'm glad
look as good, but they are obviously still burdened in that engine to a greater degree than some other up-reses. I mean, well, we're just talking about how great Grand Theft Auto 5 looks.
Yeah.
Right? And I think Auto 5 looks measurably better as an HD game versus its prior generation than Far Cry 4 does with its prior generation.
I don't know. I mean, I think I understand what you're saying, Garnet. I think I grasp what you're saying, but I think I'd side a little with Jeff because I played Far Cry. I own it on PC, and it's how I played most of it. You know, I haven't completed it or by any means of the imagination, but put a good amount of hours into it on PC. And then I also played the PS3 version at a friend's, and graphically, I think it takes a hit, but also frame rate, man. I mean, you go into some of those encounters with animals and multiple guards and you throw a grenade and you're hitting 10, 15 frames per second and it's just chugging. So I think I understand, you know, people's desire to have current gen or whatever PS4 gen, Xbox One gen only games, because I think, you know, when you're developing just for that, you will get prettier, more beautiful, more rich games. But at the same time, it's kind of like this game's going to be great, and if we were going to have it, if Far Cry 4 is only going to be current gen, it'd probably be 2015, you know, or, you know, later 2015 or whatever. So it's kind of taking the good with the bad, where it's like we want all new engines and all new whatever, but we also want it now. And versus games like Wolfenstein, which I don't know if you've played yet, Garnet, but I, you know, finished, and it's definitely on current or last gen 360 and PS3. And I played it on PS4 and it was phenomenal. It was a great experience. It looked better on PS4 and I had fun with it.
I think it falls into this category that the Garnet is talking about. I think I played Wolfenstein on PS4, and I think it looks marginally better than a, you know, it looks like a good PC game from a couple of years ago to me, in the same way that Garnet's talking about. I think that's an example of where we are in this weird middle ground.
No, it is, but I'm saying the games can still be fun. You know what I mean? I understand that desire, but it's like, don't throw away a game because we're in this weird cross-gen world right now.
That's my argument, but I feel like there are folks who have been making the counter-argument to me of, you know, that it's just that the burden of disappointment that comes from having now moved, you know, coming up this fall on a year past the launch of the new machines, that, you know, the expectation continues to sort of ramp up behind that to, well, where's my payoff?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and certainly looking at games like The Order and that little, you know, they released the trailer for Uncharted 4 on the Naughty Dog website at 60 frames in 1080p. And it's just...
Yeah, I would say that the Uncharted trailer was next level. I mean, yeah. Definitely next level.
And the confirmation that is in engine, that's, I mean, we are in store for something really special. And the idea that right now the next gen games are next gen, it's like, well, not really, not yet. But it's the same every time where you get these, you know, you get the Perfect Dark Zeros of the world coming out, and it's like, well, really, that's what we're in store for? It's like, no, we have Gears of War coming, you know?
Yeah, but 1 year later.
Did either of you play The Order?
I did, yeah. Okay. I was blown away.
I mean, I think that this would be like a good place then to say, you know, counterpoint. Like, how do you feel about where they are with the game mechanics and their integration of, you know, transferring you seamlessly between cutscene and full control?
Amazing. I the little level that I played, if that's indicative of the game, I am so in. That game really impressed me. And I said on the show this week that what it seems to me that the game is going for is very much the same experience that Uncharted delivers, where it's really more about conveying this narrative to you and then dropping you in and out of gameplay situations as needed. And this game really feels like a cover-based shooter in those gameplay moments. But the reason that in the trailer that we saw at the press conference, it seemed, at least to me, of like, well, what is this game? I don't even understand what the game is. I got it after I played it. It's like, it's the same thing as Uncharted. It's, you're influencing the story in certain ways, and it's really about conveying this very cinematic story to you. And then you're dropped into narrative moment, or excuse me, gameplay moments, and it turns into this really cool cover-based shooter, at least the level that they let us play at the show.
I hope you're not terribly disappointed by the final product.
Oh, it sounds like somebody has info that I...
Well, I can't make that large a leap based off of what I saw. What I played was a third-person cover-based shooter that was okay. There are certainly games that have made, you know, better third-person shooter impressions. The one weapon was cool. I thought it was fun to use the thermite rifle to paint. I mean, one of the things I found out you could do is you could paint the thermite gas into like shapes in the space and ignite it. But I think that there's a real serious issue with the way that you take control out of the player's hands and hand it back to them in and out of the game. And while it's really cool from a narrative and storytelling standpoint, I wonder how disruptive it would be over the course of an entire level. And I don't think it's the same as Uncharted. Uncharted has a very clear, hey, here are the storytelling cinematic pieces. All right, now I hand you control and you go play the game. And then you get to a spot and then it takes you back out and there might even be a black frame. And then you get back to, okay, here's this cinematic piece. Well, I mean, the thing that they were doing that's so cool, and you notice it like right from the beginning of that demo, is, you know, Galahad comes around the corner and you're in the middle of a cinematic. And the cinematic happens, and almost without realizing it, the control now is in your hands and you are moving forward to get into that first piece of cover. Right?
Right.
And I mean, that's a really cool idea. I wonder how forced and controlled the game has to be on the whole. And I guess part of the reason I'm thinking about all this is all the things that they've talked about how, you know, narrative is their number one thing for this game, and they're, you know, really in on the story. And I love the idea of, I love the idea that they're having. I mean, I love the Victorian era stuff that they have. I thought that I thought the transform that they showed into the werewolf was completely badass. You know, I thought that was really one of the coolest. That was some like American Werewolf in London shit right there. You know, yeah. Definitely like that full transform was awesome looking. There was no cutaway. There was nothing really faked. I mean, that was all like happening right there. And you know, because of the way they're making it, that that's all an engine. So that makes me think there could be some really cool dramatic moments while I have a gun in my hand, like doing something in the game with werewolves. So that's cool.
And I think
I'm a little concerned about how forced it might have to be.
Well, I think it's forced. One way to put it is forced. And the other way to put it is that it's a linear storytelling game in the same way that Uncharted is. At least that's what it seemed like to me, in the sense that it's delivering me an A to B story, and I'm progressing through the story. And, you know, some people might say on rails, but, you know, we have so many of these open world games and a variety of games. I like that there happens to be a really focused narrative kind of game being made. I enjoy the Uncharted games for that. And, you know, all games don't have to be that.
Dude,
you know what I mean?
You know my number one reason for playing games, and the number one reason games are my primary source of entertainment, is that I'm looking for that sort of entertainment, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that is exactly it. I think
and what you're saying is,
game though, is like, it still has to get that gaming part just right.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And the other point that you made, is that, we don't really have a sense of the narrative. We don't have a sense of how well it's written based on what we've seen so far. So it'll really hang its hat on if it's really trying to tell you story. If the story is crap, then the game is not going to feel very funny either.
The atmosphere is cool as hell.
Oh, yeah. And I've never seen better character models in a game in my life.
Unbelievable. I mean, just the fact that it is a dedicated, and in this case, platform exclusive game, obviously gives it a tremendous leg up in the visuals department. I mean, it looks spectacular. Yeah. That's I'm not debating that in the least.
Let me just say this. I'm going to buy it day one unless it doesn't work. Too. And so you guys can wait until I tell you how awesome it is.
Go ahead.
Then we can talk about whether or not the story delivers. But yeah, that's a day one. I said during one of our E3 shows, Ready at Dawn has done no wrong by me, and I will get this game on day one.
Yeah, it's a day one for me. It's a day one for me as well, obviously. I mean, I'm dying to play it because of all the cool stuff around it. I'm just saying I'm trying to rein in my expectations because I think there are still some, you know, signs that are out there that leave me a little nervous about it.
Could you guys imagine if they managed to hit their date, though, if this had been a fall release this year, and you could have this game up against a lot of the other games that are coming out in 2014 that can't hold a candle to how this game looks. It would have been really interesting to see that all played out.
I'd actually say that it's good for them that they moved to February.
Really? It's going to be crowded.
I'd actually
February,
say it's
man.
Good for them they moved to February because they will have a much better space for themselves to be in. They won't have to compete with the ultra high hype machines of these big games that are coming. They're going to spend just ridiculous amounts of money on marketing. And I don't want this game to underperform because it was just blown away by other people's marketing budgets. I mean, the amount of money that's going to be spent to market Call of Duty and Destiny. Yeah. I mean, those are just a couple of the games, right?
Yeah,
think
you're right.
How much is coming out this fall? Assassin's Creed, two Assassin's Creeds, as a matter of fact, one for next gen, one for current gen.
Trying
to compete with that sort of firepower is foolhardy at best.
Yeah, I just, you know, I'll be playing my Witchers in February, so I don't know. Speaking of things that are well-timed, how about we take a moment and thank our sponsor, MailChimp. MailChimp is an easy email newsletter service. It helps you design email newsletters, share them on social networks, integrate them with services you already use, and track your results. It's like your own personal publishing platform. So if you have any reason to communicate to large groups of people, medium-sized groups of people, even small groups of people, MailChimp makes it easy. You can customize your newsletter sign-up to match your brand. You can share your sign-up on your website and your Facebook page. And you can collect sign-ups from an iPad or a laptop. You can even import existing email lists, no matter the format. So if you already have a list of people that you need to communicate with, you don't have to re-sign them up. It makes it very, very easy. You can personalize your you can personalize what your subscribers see, including sign-up forms and confirmation emails. And right now, there has never been a better time to try MailChimp. With their entrepreneur plan, if you have under 2,000 subscribers, you can send 12,000 emails per month forever. Just visit MailChimp.com/5x5 to learn more. That's MailChimp.com/5x5. Get your word out with MailChimp. Make it easy, make it cool looking, and make it fun for your subscribers. MailChimp.com/5x5. They support our show, and we hope you support them in return. All right, dudes, I want to hit one more story that, I mean, I think E3 is a big deal and is the story of the week, and all the stuff we've been talking about certainly is the story of the week. But, you know, right before E3, Mario Kart 8 came out, and as submitted in our subreddit, Mario Kart 8 did some really good things for the Wii U sales. Evidently, according to Reggie Fils and me, the Wii U's weekly sales quadrupled because of Mario Kart 8. It's almost as if having good games out for your system makes people want your system.
One times four equals four.
Oh, wow. That's rough. We know that the game topped 1 million sales on its release weekend, making it the fastest selling Wii U game to date. So it did really well. There's supposedly an 18% attach rate, which is crazy high. So is this good news? I mean, I think Nintendo is one of the companies that came out smelling the best from E3. A lot of people were really impressed with their Nintendo Direct and with a lot of the games that they showed. I know you guys are both kind of doom and gloom on Nintendo. Did E3 change your mind at all, Garnett?
How would it have changed my mind?
I mean, they showed great games. They showed great games. They showed really cool games. They showed little figurines that are neat.
They did what Nintendo does. So, you know, how would they have changed my mind? They would have had to have had a little more of something that showed that they have some progressive thought patterns any place, some development anywhere in there that would like be pushing things forward. I saw things I was really excited about. For instance, I watched the Treehouse stream of Xenoblade Cross and was drinking it in. I mean, I was like in love with it right off the bat, and it looks fantastic. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if anybody else had a chance to watch that Treehouse live stream. They played Xenoblade Cross for about an hour, and it was majestic. I mean, majestic is
so they played 0.02% of the game.
Do what?
They played 0.02% of the game.
Right, and that's the other thing you know about Xenoblade is it's going to be just ginormous, and so that's going to be fantastic. And obviously, they're hitting on full cylinders with Mario Kart 8, and they showed some interesting stuff like Splatoon. That was really cool. I thought that was very fun. But everything that they showed and did was in Nintendo's wheelhouse perfectly, and unless they find a way to blow that up into larger scale, which they haven't, then I feel like they have struggle. I mean, Zelda, how can you, I mean, the conversation has to go with Zelda. As a gamer, I am head over heels for the promise of Zelda and that crazy transition of Link riding Epona, like down the, like around this giant outside world and then out onto this dock. And suddenly you're in like this cool boss fight. And I'm thinking, this is amazing. This is super badass. But as far as changing my mind about where Wii U is, these are all things that I would expect and anticipate for a Nintendo product, and especially things that I sort of already felt should have been there on this platform.
Yeah, this E3 really showcased that Nintendo continues to make incredible games. But also, wow. I mean, I know we've been talking about the lack of third-party support in Nintendo consoles seemingly since forever, you know, N64 on. But, I mean, it's like Bayonetta 2, which is kind of in-house. This, you know, is second party this time around with Nintendo putting up the money to make that happen. And so much of what they were showing were just great Nintendo games. And it's hard to sustain a console. Don't get me wrong. great Nintendo games. I mean, we talked about it on the E3 coverage, Jeff, that Splatoon is up there with one of my best in show from this year's E3, and Toad's Treasure Chase, or whatever it's called, Toad's, the Toad game, is supposed to actually come out this year. It looks incredible, but it's just...
I think it's called Toad and the Wet Sprocket, isn't it? No?
Oh, that's a good, that's a good band. sweet pull, bro. They need to...
Four people got that reference.
All four that bought Wii U's when Mario Kart 8 came out. If you want a Wii U, that's great. Go buy one, but just know what you're getting and budget it in. And, you know, a lot of people are like, I love it. After E3, I wanted to go get one. That's great. Just know that you're spending this money and these are the games that are out, and then go and enjoy it. But yeah, I mean, I agree. When Garnet, that was classic Garnet Lee zing there, at retort to Jeff's question, which was, I loved it. Perfect. but like, yeah, I don't think they changed anything. I don't think they righted any ship. They just keep doing what they're doing. And every year people want to say Nintendo's done, put a fork in them, and they say, we make incredible games. Here they are. But I don't think that they showed a revolution as to what they are, what they do, unfortunately.
Well, that really goes in contrast to the sort of sentiment that I tended to get from the show floor and from people is they, I think Nintendo wowed some folks, but
I think they do that every E3 though. I mean, they come out with these, you know, they had Mario Kart 8 last year, and I don't know if you remember back, but everyone was like, this is amazing. This looks more beautiful than any of the PS4 and Xbox One games that they're showing. And it's so beautiful. And they had Mario 3D World on the show floor. That was blowing people away. The cat suit, there were cat suit memes everywhere. I mean, that's what Nintendo does. They walk out of E3, everybody riding high. And then it's another 6 months until any of those games maybe come out. And then Zelda's not coming out until 2024. Each time I say it, it's a year later. Now it's 2030 is when Zelda's coming out.
Stop saying it. Stop saying it. I mean, I think that one of my, the things I keep saying over and over is I wish they would just put out that exact thing that they had at E3 for Splatoon, that exact level, just put that out as a $10 downloadable, $14 downloadable thing this holiday on the Wii U shop and let people just play that. That would be such a great thing to do. Yeah, it seemed pretty polished. Yeah, it's not a full game, but don't send it out as a full game. Put it down as this inexpensive, you know, thing that you can play on your Wii U right now. That would be awesome. Anyway,
that's
all right. Enough E3
statement.
Yeah, thanks. So let's get. I'm so dying to hear what you guys think of Destiny. So let's get now to the playlist.
Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us. Ooh, what you playing this week? Tell us on the playlist.
I have to thank Sean Madigan again for that bumper, as well as the fun E3 hype train bumper that we played all week. He is awesome, and he's been really cool sending those in to us. So, Garnet, Destiny,
yes.
You've been playing it all weekend while I was in Wisconsin. Tell me what you think of it.
I think it is my destiny. My destiny will be to play lots and lots of that game, because
that sounds good.
I was completely enthralled. As a matter of fact, I so loved it that I think that in my way, first of all, I was resistant to trying the alpha because of my whole thing about like staying in the now and playing games that are out and all that kind of stuff, and was eventually talked into it by everybody and their brother on Twitter. So then I tried it out. And now I am definitely going dark. I mean, I feel like I definitely don't want to play the beta. I want to wait to play it when it comes out and be part of it, because it is an amazing game of game elements informed by a number of types of games that I love. So, you know, the shooting of Halo, the AI and amazing world environment of Halo. So you get things like the, you know, the analogy of the, you know, the analog of the Covenant and the Flood fighting. So you have that same thing where you can come up on a hive and fall and fight and just sit there and watch it and be amazed by it. But then if one of them catches sight of you, it becomes like a three-way fight and you have all these really cool things happening. So it's got that going on. It really evolves the Halo era boss fights and brings them into more like, so I don't know if you guys played the Strike mission, but the Strike mission felt so much like a first person shooter MMO that I was like, this is a page out of the WoW playbook done perfectly for a shooter. just absolutely fantastic. We had these great epic battles. I mean, last night we did that strike with, I did that strike with two other listeners. We were playing together on PS4 and it was so great because we were like, oh my God, we are never going to be able to beat this boss, which is something everyone has had an experience of if they played WoW when they're going into a raid. And then you figure out how to handle the minions and handle the boss, and you stay at it and you stay at it, and you're able to bring him down, and you get that like, wow, that was so freaking epic. And it was just that experience plus, you know, the Diablo-like ability to find all of this new gear and play around with all your gear and have your gear show up on your tune. Awesome. So I could not have been more pleased with the way they set it up, even down to there's so much intelligent design in just the user experience, whether it be the way you move from in orbit to the different areas where you have activities, to the way that they've laid out the character management. So, you know, if you compare this to like a Borderlands, which I think a lot of people will, because it has that sort of shooting RPG action aspect to it, mm-hmm. It's so much easier to manage your inventory and your equipment because of the way they've set it up. I mean, the UI is just, it's so well thought out and so easy to play around with. Thought it was excellent. And as everybody in the chat says, and it has a dance buttons.
Dance button for the win. So you know me well. Is it my destiny as well?
Yeah, I think you'll absolutely love it. So another thing, so I think one of the things that was really cool, this is, you know, digging down a little bit into the way they've evolved the design of the shooter, is that, so you have two weapons with all three of the characters, and you have a primary weapon, and your primary weapon is very effective. So it's not a case where you would be, for instance, in Halo, you might have carried two weapons and switched between them as primary, but use them in situations depending on what the situation is, right? So you might have carried, say, a battle rifle and a needler, depending on what you wanted to do. You know, use the needler to drag down shields, switch over to your battle rifle, and get some good impact damage. Like, you might have gone back and forth like that. In this game, your primary weapon will be your primary weapon. It'll be the weapon you use the most. It'll be the weapon you have the most ammunition for, and it will be an effective tool for taking down the enemy. But then as your secondary, you'll have an option of different situational tools. So you might have a sniper rifle there, or you might have a shotgun there. And you have to decide, you know, so I'm going to have my primary weapon, which will be good at, you know, some degree of medium range up to close range. This will be my standard combat tool. I'll be running around using this the most. But when I'm not going to be in that form of combat, do I want something that's super effective really up close? Or do I want something that's super effective at really long range? And that secondary ammo is a very limited resource. So it's a really cool evolution of how I play the game, because instead of just switching back and forth all the time, you know, I have to think about, okay, well, what am I doing with my secondary weapon? How am I using it in the game space that I'm playing in? And how does it relate to how I want to tactically play the game? I thought that was bad. I thought that was a really cool, smart little tweak and refinement to that system.
Sounds awesome. Christian, what did you think?
Yeah, so I jumped in, and so it has just a sliver of the PvE, you know, single player or whatever mode, and then, you know, the multiplayer, which is 6v6. And in terms of an alpha, or a beta, whatever you want to call it, a slice of the game, a demo, they did a really good job, I think, for how they get you into it. You load it up, you customize your character, you know, the race, the gender, and then the facial features and all this cool stuff, and you make them feel unique and however you want your character to look. And then it drops you into the PvE, or the single player part of the game, and you're often to explore this part of Earth after people have left, and you're kind of going through, and it's letting you figure out the controls in a way that's not too tutorially, but also it's not dumping you into PvP versus, we might get into it today, but like the Battlefield Hardline beta, which of course Battlefield is known for its multiplayer. You fire up that beta and it's, here you go. You're in a, you know, huge war. Figure it out.
that was honestly one of my big worries about Destiny is because they were showing at E3, that the couple of times that I looked, they were showing a lot of the PvP stuff. And I was, as somebody who didn't particularly have a lot of fun playing, you know, the later Halo multiplayer games, it wasn't really my bag. You know, I was like, oh, is that, I hope that this isn't just that.
Right.
I'm really excited much more about the group PvE stuff and taking down bosses and playing much more of an MMO, as Garnet was describing.
Right. So, yeah. So I went through that first tutorial. Then I played some PvP. But when I had my first, however you want to phrase it, Jeff, I know you had your Hearthstone, you know, stories or whatever. But I had my first random awesome story of glory and destiny. So I went back down to Earth and it's basically side missions or whatever. Collect this, get that kind of. Beacons are left and you listen to a little VO and it tells you to collect these things. These bounties have been set out and you go and kill these things or get these guys or whatever. Kind of classic MMO stuff, but side questy stuff in this part of the world they have for the alpha. And I'm down there and I'm playing through and I'm collecting these things and I get to the part of the level, which if you want to know nothing about potential PvE portions of Destiny, there's going to be a minor spoiler here. It's not that big of a deal, I don't think, but just FYI. Tune out for 30 seconds. In part of the world, you encounter a witch or a magician. I forget exactly what they call him. And it's a boss battle for this PvE, a very minor little single player boss battle. And I'm going through collecting these things that I need to get. And I get to that part of the world where that enemy is. And I'm like, oh, I don't really want to go. Oh, this is going to. And I turn the corner. And right as he's gunning at me, he whips around and starts shooting behind him. And I'm like, what the? And I come around and there are two other dudes, randoms, that are in this world with me. I don't know how they got there. I don't know how this matchmaking works for this PvE part of the alpha. And they're attacking the same enemy. And then I come up behind him, switch to my secondary, which is a shotgun, pump two into him, and then knife him, and he drops. And the two other dudes, one dude waves, and of course there's a dance button. The other dude dances, I wave, and we took the dude out. And then I went up and partnered with them, and we went around, and we found some loot. And then we went on and attacked one other big boss in this single-player part of the world. And it was awesome. Just totally a random encounter where here I was dreading going in and fighting this guy. And then the AI reacts to these other humans attacking, and we took this guy down super quick. And then we played for another hour together with just some strangers. And like those moments, I think, is what makes that type of game, like any good.
So awesome.
Exactly. MMO.
And you know what that's called, Christian? It's called an MMO.
I know. I'm aware of that. I'm aware of that. But my concern of this game, and also with a lot of MMOs potentially, is that every time you go back to that part of the world, that enemy is there again.
Right. Yeah, no actual impact on the world is what you're saying.
Right. And like if that continues through, and it's kind of cool because you can grind and whatever. And I know that's a part of these types of games, but it's also kind of frustrating if they're building in a real narrative, unlike, you know, Titanfall's narrative. If you're trying to progress through this thing and then you go back there and this guy's back again, I think that could get repetitive and annoying. But it was awesome when it happened last night.
Christian, I mean, it is, and Jeff, you'll understand this description. It is a WoW zone. I mean, it is pick your favorite zone out of WoW, and that's what this area was, and I presume that's what the other areas will be. And, you know, right now, the one thing, and it's been pointed out, Lawman pointed it out in the chat, and he absolutely thought the same thing, was the respawns were set super fast. I think part of that was to ensure that every group of players that came through the space would have enemies to fight against so that they could be constantly, you know, engaged with something. But that's the way the system works, Jeff, is that you hit the planet, and then there are these beacons around, and you can use your little mini guilty spark, which you pull up by hitting the tapping the touchpad, and then it'll show you where the beacons are. You go to a beacon, you hold down the square button, it pulls up the quest that's out of that beacon, and these seem to be. I'm wondering if they're even procedurally generated because they tend to fall into, you know, a few quick categories of go kill a bunch of X and collect Y from them. Go someplace and monitor, you know, do a surveillance or go someplace and retrieve some item or wipe out some hero.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds familiar, doesn't it?
For sure. Yeah.
And so system. You're always adventuring in that world. But Christian, I mean, the counterpoint to that is what's cool is, and this really fits into the narrative of what we think about Destiny, which is that you're like this hunter who keeps coming down to the planet, is that you're going to really build a knowledge of the space that you're adventuring in. And if you played an MMO before, you know, that's one of those things that's really cool. You know, like after you've spent a while in Stranglethorn Vale, you like really know the place.
Right.
You really know where all of the ins and outs of it are. And that's a really cool sort of developing relationship you have with the game because you learn the environment.
Yeah, no. I think I think this was on Gaff where I first saw it, and forgive me for not knowing the poster's name, but it's like, will Bungie do for the MMO what they did for the first person shooter? Like, are they going to be the ones that successfully console-ize the MMO? And I think they did it by making it so much of it seem like Halo, that it's a gateway drug to get you in and playing. And then before you know it, you're in a quote unquote wow zone, right? You're doing these things that MMO players have been doing for years, maybe arguably better with, you know, the late game and add-ons for WoW. And we're like, this is the most amazing thing. And then I did this. And then, dude, my friend showed up. And we took down this big boss. And then we got 6 sheepskins. And it was the most epic thing ever. But well, they're making it amazing for consoles.
You bring up an interesting thing. And I thought of this too. And, you know, Garnet, you said you bring up your own personal guilty spark. Does it feel like a reskin of Halo? And maybe the more pertinent question is, if there had been better negotiations, do you think this would be an amazing Halo game? Should it have been?
No, it's definitely, to my mind, just informed by Halo and takes, you know, all of those things that they did really well and brings them into a whole new design, because I really like the, you know, the language and fiction that they seem to be setting up here. This idea of the visitor and this crazy orb and who knows what's happened and why humanity was wiped out. I think that it's, if anything, it's tickling me imaginatively a little more than you know, Halo's here's the Covenant sort of thing. I don't know. There's just something about this that's just, to me, is speaking a little more to me right now. Maybe it's because we've done so much Halo.
It's just new.
Yeah. This, to me, marries some of the best things about Titanfall, which I know they couldn't have really cribbed too much off of, but like Titanfall, Halo, and Call of Duty, where it feels Halo-y in the movement and also even in the cursor aim. I know you can adjust that, but that it's not a float, but there's a feel to Halo versus Call of Duty. But then you aim down the sights like Call of Duty, but then it has a nice rocket double jump a la Titanfall that gives you a little bit, not, you know, parkour, but it gives verticality to the levels. In the PvP, there are 2 maps in the alpha. One is the moon and one is on Earth. And the moon one has the vehicles in it and is a much broader, wider map. And the one on Earth, there's some really cool verticality. And for me, playing the PvP, I know, Garnet, you said you're going dark on the game. I'll probably play some of the beta, because alphas and betas, or whatever you want to call it, is my time to shine in PvP.
Because not very many people around.
Yeah, well, we're all learning the maps. Like, I don't have the time to dedicate to a game the way some other people do, and I commend them for that. That's awesome. But then once everybody...
It reminds me of my friend used to think that song, "You're the Best Around," he used to think that the line was, "You're the best in town," which, you know, means that in the next town over, there's people a heck of a lot better than you, but just stay in this small little town and you're the best. And I think, Christian, you're the best in town during the betas.
Yeah, I'm not the best, but I finished 3rd or 4th on my team instead of 6th when everyone knows the level, and I turn the corner and I'm like, oh, I'm going to go get this control sniped. Oh, here I go to get this sniped. And my people on my team are like, quit going through the choke point. And I'm like, what do you mean? That's where the level guides me there, because it's a choke point. Did you play any PvP, Garnet?
I did not play the PvP. I was so enthralled with the PvE and the strikes that I was just like completely jamming on that.
So, real quick, just to touch on the PvP then, since it's just kind of be me talking or you guys asking questions. It's 6-on-6. Like I said, the moon was the big map that they have in the alpha that has vehicles, and then Earth is verticality. But what I think is interesting about it is that you carry your character in from the PvE into the multiplayer. And from what they say briefly on screen when you load up the PvP, and what I've been able to read online, you know, just kind of skimming through things, is they say that don't worry, it will still be balanced. But you're going to bring in your gear and your weapons and things into the PvP. And I think that the way they're planning to balance it is by limiting the ammo drops for your heavy weapon. But that, to me, is the biggest question mark. What I always preferred, except for Halo 4, which I think, in my opinion, and I don't think I'm saying anything crazy here, the weakest multiplayer of the Halo series, was I started to prefer the Halo over Call of Duty, again, because I don't have time to prestige 8 times over in multiplayer, is that every time you started Halo, you all started on an even battlefield. You had the same guns, the rocket launchers in the same place, and you know, then it was just aiming accuracy and knowing the geometry of the map. And I really hope that Bungie's able to pull off balancing in the PvP? Because I love the idea of bringing in your customization and having your guy outfitted in some of the perks you've unlocked from the PvE into the PvP world. But then I also just fear that here's someone that has put 400 hours into this MMO, and then they come over to the PvP and just stomp me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just getting Hulk smashed everywhere. Because then I
Wouldn't you be paired up with a comparable level guy? I mean, that's how they do PvP in other MMOs.
Well, we know how well that works.
Right. And it's yes and no. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm curious to see how they handle the balancing, because hopefully, yes, there would still be some of that, but there'd also be weapon balancing, because I don't know. Like I said, that's a concern, but it's not out yet, and there's a lot of questions to be answered. But you, Garnet, you completed a strike, right? Like, I didn't
The strike. We finished the strike, and there were many, many epic moments on the road to completing that strike.
Well, speaking of MMOs,
another thing that will impact all of this is that, you know, we got just a hint of the surface level of there are so many systems in the metagame for Destiny. So there are bounties that you can go out and do. There are different Vanguard levels and skills that you get from are different Vanguard levels that you gain from competing in multiplayer. So there's reasons to compete in each of and play in each of the segments of the game, and by so doing you earn sort of a currency doing that you can then apply to getting different sorts of gear. So you can see, like, someone who has on a full set, back to the MMO thing, if you see someone who has on like a full set of raid gear, you know that person is like a big raider. If you see someone has on a full set of PvP gear, you're like, oh, that person does a shit ton of PvP. Right. Same sort of thing.
It's a tried and true formula, but I think it's a wonderful thing to bring into the first person shooter space, because I mean, we're seeing part of that with games like Fallout 3 and 4, where the shooter is there, but it gives you all these different avenues to advancement. So if in Fallout 3 you want to go take down a base, you can go do that. Or if you want to sort of kill a bunch of animals so you can level up your pouch or whatever, you can go do that. And it, you know, it's very much that MMO style, but taking it into a different kind of game. And I'm really excited for that.
And one correction from our E3 podcast, where I only had a brief time with the game on the show floor, and it was PvP, and I said numbers don't come flying off the guys. In PvP, numbers don't. In PvE, like in Borderlands, you do see hit points flying off the guys. I still wish it was it's a little less pronounced than in Borderlands, where I feel like it's almost a pinball table sometimes when you're really laying into a big guy. PvE numbers do fly off, but it's not as bold as you would maybe see it in Borderlands.
I need
but
numbers
it is
flying
there.
Off guys, man. I need numbers off guys.
You sure as hell needed them in the strike, because especially taking on the bosses, you needed to see like what sort of damage you were doing with what sort of weapon, depending on where the hit locations were, and you know, like trying to figure out how to handle that boss and how to handle approaching him. Like, our strategies were changing on the fly all the time. Like, was this working? Was this working? Is this working? Let's do this.
My favorite thing that's happening in the chat room right now is people are coming up with equations to describe Destiny. Borderlands plus Guild Wars 2 equals Destiny. Somebody wrote Pokemon plus Kinect Sports plus Call of Duty equals Destiny.
Yu-Gi-Oh! Plus Wii Bowling plus Contra.
Beer Tapper plus Just Dance plus Deus Ex equals Destiny.
The novel Push by Sapphire.
Tetris equals Destiny. That's pretty wonderful. I love you guys in the chat room.
Before we lose the thread, Jeff, would it be okay if I talked about the Hardline beta for a little bit, or do we have somewhere else we need to go?
Well, I wanted to talk also about WildStar, but go ahead and talk about Borderline.
And Evolve, which is badass.
So I'll hit quick and we'll definitely come back, because I'll keep playing the beta. So this is me wrestling with my internal feelings and potentially being a hypocrite. So if you know anything about Hardline, it's cops versus robbers. It's Payday 2 meets Battlefield. It meets whatever else people in the chat want to creatively come up with. But I find myself playing it and struggling with the idea that these are cops versus robbers in a real city, and you are destroying the city in the way that, you know, Battlefield 4 had destructible environment. Like, the building's collapsing now and the crane's coming down. And I am having a hard time separating myself from this being a city where real people are. And I am a cop on a freaking war path, just laying waste to whatever is in my way, just like batoning, billy clubbing through glass windows and office buildings and then kicking out a window and then, you know, coming down and just blowing up, just mass murder. And so that, to me, I'm having a hard time dealing with like the quote-unquote plot of multiplayer, and I understand how ridiculous that is. But what I think is the bigger issue, and paints me as a bigger hypocrite, and perhaps is a bigger commentary on where I am as a gamer, and maybe gaming is that I've become so numb to that when it's set in quote-unquote war, a la Battlefield 4, I don't have a problem with it. But in that fictitious world, that's still someone's home, that one country has declared war against the other country and we're still blowing crap up and going on this terror rampage. But when it's cops and robbers, it feels it's more painful. That's the wrong word, but it's the best I can come up with for me to participate in that sandbox. And so I'm wrestling with that idea. I think to some extent, maybe like Rainbow Six Siege, the VO versus the action on screen, where it's like, this doesn't feel right to me. But then I find myself questioning why it does feel right to do that in war. And so that has nothing to do with gameplay, but just thoughts putting out there for the hardline concept. And it's because it's a bigger destruction than like a Payday. I didn't have these same feelings with Payday. Anyway, chat, tweet at me, show feedback. Let me know your thoughts on it. And we'll just put that into the universe. And that's my struggle with that game right now.
So I'm with you, Christian. I started thinking about the same thing because I had fun playing Payday and I was trying to reconcile how it was that I had fun playing Payday and it didn't bother me. But watching Hardline, I just felt from the outset that this was, you know, completely tone deaf to what it was doing.
Yeah, it's an issue, man. It's a problem. It's a problem. And you know, I was sitting there at that press conference and they were showing that game and they were on a rooftop playing it. And meanwhile, you know, just a few miles from my house, there was someone on a rooftop with a rifle. And, you know, it's just
that was really creepy.
It's something for a much longer discussion. But I do want to get to WildStar a little bit.
WildStar.
Because there's always that game every year at E3 that comes out right before E3 and then sort of gets drowned out by the cacophony of E3 news and games. And I played a whole bunch of WildStar in the week leading up to E3 and didn't get a chance to talk about it on the show yet. And I'm definitely playing more of it, but I'm early on. I just hit level 15, just got my first mount, just got to the first big city of Thade. And I am playing an Esper class, which is sort of a caster. And WildStar gave me a really great first impression. First of all, that world is just a load of fun to be in. It's so wonderfully designed. It brings the whimsy. It's got great dialogue that's funny and charming. And, it's got this cartoony art style that's very ratchet and clanky, you know. It certainly does feel like Space WoW.
It sort of appears like when you look at it from the outside that it's sort of an eclectic collection of different things.
Yeah, it's like a big Western in a lot of ways, and you know, it's got space tech, but it also has sort of zombies and stuff. I mean, it really doesn't cling to any particular narrative trope. It's like, well, it's everything in the kitchen sink, and it's doing it with humor, and it doesn't take itself too seriously at all. So it gives itself license to do all that stuff because it's just having fun. It's like, if this is fun, we're throwing it into our game. But the universe is really dense and really interesting and super vibrant and colorful, which makes it fun to be a part of. Right when WoW was released, however many years ago it was now, 8 or 9 years ago, I remember sitting down and loving that game so much and going, oh my God, I hope the next thing that Blizzard makes in a couple years is, you know, World of Spacecraft and, StarCraft, World of StarCraft. Of course, they didn't make that, but this almost feels like it. We only had to wait however many years. It almost feels like it because while it doesn't have the StarCraft specific IP, it really does feel like you're playing WoW in a space environment with distance and range as one of your primary attributes. So you're playing your toolbar just as you do in WoW, but almost everything that isn't melee has a cone of effect, area effect that displays on the ground in front of you to show you how many things will be affected and what direction will be affected by your attack. So, you know, area effect is basically everything. If there's more than one enemy standing in that cone, more than one enemy gets hit by your attacks, which is really cool because you can sort of, you know, play the game in a much more action sense. And there's a dodge, double tap on a direction and you dodge out of the way. So the enemies themselves are also laying those patterns on the ground. And the way those patterns are determined based on the enemy that you're fighting, I think, is really clever. So, for example, if you're fighting like a giant dinosaur or something and it's gonna, you know, rake you with its claw, what you see right before it rakes you is this sort of wide swath cone effect. But if you're playing some sort of robot that shoots things out at you, there may be a much different pattern on the ground. And if you're not standing in the red area of their pattern, then you don't get hit. So it's a lot of dodging, it's a lot of real-time, you know, dealing with that kind of stuff, which makes for a different kind of way to play these games. However, everything else in the game is basically wow. I mean, the way the quests are.
I like you saying that, like being impressed. Everything else is basically wow.
No, I'm not impressed. I mean, it's a bit of a throwback, especially for me coming from ESO, Elder Scrolls Online, which I loved so much. I know a lot of people didn't, but I did. It really felt like moving MMOs into a really fresh, different, new place for me. And I really don't understand how people cannot feel that way about that game, but that's a different discussion. But this feels like a step back into the familiar. It's like, these are how MMOs have been made for the last decade, and we're making one. And really, the draw is the beautiful universe and the fun fiction, and it's just fun to be in this world. And if you like MMOs that have a very familiar pattern to them, as I do and as a lot of people do, this will feel very familiar, and it will feel very fun and very accessible right away. And it's got cool stuff. I mean, it's got hoverboards as mounts. It's this fun sci-fi setting with really cool design. And one other really big thing that it has right at the beginning, which most MMOs will announce and say, you know, at some point we'll put this in the game, but they launched with it, and that is player housing. And they do player housing in a really cool way. You get your own planet that you can beam yourself up to, and you can decide who your neighbors are. So if you've got other friends in your game world, you can have them, you can select them as your neighbors so that you see their planet from your planet, and you can visit their planet and visit their house. And one of the major player trade skills in the game is architect. So you can create, you can loot items that are ways to, you know, upgrade your house and decorate your house. Excuse me. And you can also create them as an architect. So, pardon me.
Okay, Jeff, while you get a sip of water there real quick, here's what I want to ask you. Because I've been sitting here listening to your description, and full disclosure, I have a code from Nexon in my email because I had started talking about WildStar before E3, and they're like, hey, you know, you should try it out. You know, we think you'd like it, blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. So I've been sitting there looking at that, and I'm going to try it out. But what I'm not getting from you as someone who is, like, curious about the game is I'm not getting an emotional hit. You're not giving me, like, it's like, it's typical, it does this, and it's fun. Yeah. What I'm not getting a sense for, is this a Jeff Cannata like, oh my God, this is amazing? Or is this a Jeff Cannata like, I'm not feeling good, but I'm not really loving it?
It's the latter, sadly. I'm still playing it. As I said, I'm early on. I'm only level 15, but it hasn't gotten its hooks in me like ESO did. And I'm going to play more of it. I'm all my sort of regular crew of MMO players are all hopped over to this game. So, you know, I'm trying to, it was a weird speed bump getting into it and then going off to E3.
Right.
But it
are there,
I will
divided
say that,
servers? Like will you email, yeah. Should I be, I'd love to play with you. Can you shoot me the server you're on?
Thunderfoot.
The reason you're not and too excited
be,
about.
What would be a good class to compliment you?
You know, any of them. I'm playing the Esper is a range DPS / healer. So I've been really putting points into the range DPS part. So, you know, anything that catches your fancy would be a cool thing to try.
So I hope to set it up this week, and I will hop in on Thunderfoot.
Yeah, give it a shot. I think there's already a totally rad guild there as well.
I was just going to say, the reason you're not too into it, because it sounds just like another MMO, which are boring and who cares about them. Let's talk about Destiny some more, though.
No, I mean, you really hit the nail on the head, Garnet. You really picked up on that. It is something that I wish I was in love with, and I'm trying to find the love at this point. I just got to the major hub city. I basically just got out of the first starter area. That is the first 10 to 15 levels of the game. So, the game really opens up at this point, and I know there's a lot of content that I have yet to see. And I just got my house and I just got my mount, and the game is about to change in a big way for me. So maybe I'll fall in love with it. But right now, especially coming off the heels of ESO, which really felt, like a real progression. And, I didn't have to read my quests because they were acted and the writing was so interesting. And I was really drawn into the narrative of that game. Here, it really feels like I'm clicking through my quest, getting the next thing and churning out really standard MMO quests rather than the real fun story quests of ESO.
Well, here's a serious question. And I wonder to what extent, MMOs that want to be MMOs, traditional MMOs, because that's a great thing to be and why not? And there's a market for it. And, they want to be that and plant their flag there. To what extent, though, are those games challenged? The challenge they face is that a lot of their players will be people that, jump from MMO to MMO or have coming over from WoW. And WoW has existed for so long and they've done such great expansions with it that just, make the game totally different today than what it was when it started. And, you're not starting anew and you're not creating a new character and you're not getting your mount for your first time, that now, like WildStar comes out as this new MMO and people jump over to it from where they were in WoW and Mists of Pandaria. And then they come over here and it's like, oh yeah, I need to start again. And it turns out that just the beginnings of MMOs aren't great.
And you know what I mean? I don't think that's accurate. I'm only judging from my own experience with a group of guys that kind of bounce from MMO to MMO. And I really play with dudes that are almost exclusively play MMOs and always play the next big MMO. And I truly think that if my group of players is indicative of a larger group of players that do that, that's the joy. The joy is building your character up. We are not a group, and I'm sure there's a lot of people that get to end game and have a great time, and we often do as well, but it really, the joy of MMOs is the carrots on the sticks. It's pushing to the next thing, and what's my next skill, and what's my next piece of loot, and what's my next quest, and what's the next dungeon that we can do, because now we're level 20s and there's a new big dungeon to do at level 20. I mean, that progression, I think, is what keeps MMO players going. So,
but then it's like I understand how that could be exciting and that's what keeps you going, but then you're almost punishing yourself because you want to go through that quest, but then you're complaining that feels repetitive. Not, this is a universal you, right? That type of player. You want to do that and you want to do that progression, but then you're like, oh, well, it's the same. I got to go get 6 sheepskins and I got to do this. And it's like, wait, yeah, you're doing the thing you want to do, but now you're complaining, saying that it's boring to do the things that you got to do to do those things.
Christian, I think about this a lot. Believe me, I have this existential dilemma a lot.
Hey,
I go,
Jeff, you want to go see a movie? I can't right now, babe. I'm thinking about MMO progressions.
Yeah. Well, it's true. I mean, it is the junk food of gaming in a lot of ways. It's the whipped cream of gaming. It's you have some and it doesn't really satisfy you because all you're doing is trying to get to the next thing. And I really struggle with that a lot. I'm like, I play these games obsessively and I'm always thinking about where I should be getting next rather than what I'm doing now, which is, I guess, an overstatement because a lot of what I'm doing now is really, really fun. But that's what I think was so wonderful about ESO is that I was having a great time living out my story in this MMO world to the point where I almost played that game like a single player game, which I think a lot of dedicated MMO players didn't like. But these kinds of games result in a play style that is so focused on what's next that it almost, I definitely think about that a lot of, well, is it just a carrot? It's just a carrot to keep me pushing forward and forward, and it doesn't even matter. But I don't know.
And then you get to the carrot and it's like the pipes and Extra Life mushrooms in Super Mario and 3D Super Mario Land and World. They're just little cardboard things and they're not real. And you're like, oh man, I traversed so far to get to this fake cardboard cutout of a warp pipe.
Well, I think, Christian, since you brought up the word cardboard, maybe it should be tabletop time.
Right now.
So this was we had E3 this week, but this was a very big weekend in tabletop gaming as well, as we're kicking off the big convention season with one of the very biggest conventions, at least in the United States, probably second only to Gen Con. And that is Origins. And Origins took place this last weekend. A lot of people I know went to it and had a great time. Some big games debuted there and stuff. But, you know, Origins is one of those conventions that does an award for the year of a lot, in a lot of different categories for tabletop. And the Origins Awards were announced this week. And I wanted to bring them up and talk about some of the games that were given the big awards, because I've played most of them. The one I haven't played is one I'm dying to play, which is the best role-playing game that was awarded, called Numenera, which sounds really cool as a new role-playing game rule set. It was created by Monte Cook, and it beat out some really stiff competition, including 13th Age, which is a game I have done a little bit more investigation about. So I'd love to hear if any gamers out there have played Numenera and what they like about it, because it won this category and has gotten a lot of cool buzz. It's kind of a sci-fi setting game, and I'm dying to try out the rule set and see what makes it so special. But as far as the best card game and best board game, the winners were, I think, fairly predictable. We had the best traditional card game go to Love Letter, which is a game I think I've talked about before on this show. It's a very inexpensive game. Did we play it, guys? I know we played Coup with you guys, but did we play Love Letter as well?
I have not played it.
Okay. So Love Letter is this new category of card game called micro games, and they're really, really cool. It's amazing how much gameplay you can squeeze out of very, very few components. So Coup is another example of a game like that, where you literally have, you know, 10, 12 cards, maybe a dice, maybe a couple of counters, and that's the entire game. And they're really inexpensive. I think Love Letter is like $7.99 or something like that. It comes in a little kind of ridiculous velvet sack. And yes, is the design of the game, is the theme of the game, perhaps not as desirable to dudes as it could be. Yes, it's a game about sending love letters to a princess to try to gain her favor. But I would urge everybody listening not to write it off, because this is a really, really cool game that you can play. You can take anywhere, because there's so little to it. And anybody can play it. It's the kind of game you can play with people who don't usually like board games. It's easy to teach. Basically, you have two cards in your hand. You play one and you draw one card. And there's different point values on the cards. And those determine the hierarchy, how close someone is to getting to the princess. And you're trying to end up with the person closest to the princess at the end of the game. And there's ways to knock people out. So this is a really brilliant game. And it was awarded the best traditional card game. It's from Alderac Entertainment. Like I said, it's really inexpensive. I urge people to try it out. It's so fun. It's one game that I've brought out at numerous places where people are like, well, we only have a few minutes. And some of us aren't really experienced with playing, you know, designer board games. So I'll lay this on you guys. And people are like, oh, yeah, let's play it again. You usually end up playing like 3 or 4 rounds back to back, because people are like, oh, I get it now. I get it. Let's rock. Really cool game. And it beat out some stiff competition, including Marvel Legendary and the DC Comics deck building game. So give it a shot. Another of the big winners, the best board game category, was a game called Trains, which is a game I've talked about on this show. We talked about it when Tom Bassel was on as well. And that's also from Alderac Entertainment. And it beat some really big games, including Space Cadet Dice Duel, which is an awesome game, and City of Iron, which I haven't played yet, but I've heard really good things about. And Trains is a deck-building game like Dominion, where you start the game with very few cards in your hand, and through the course of playing, you build your deck up by purchasing other cards to put into your deck with the in-game currency, not real human money like Magic the Gathering. And then you are trying to connect train routes like you would in a game like Ticket to Ride or something. So it's this mashup between an actual board game where you have actual board and you need to control different points on that board and lay track between them and with a deck building game, which traditionally doesn't really have a board. So it's a pretty clever idea. I think it it feels a lot like Dominion to me. And I came away from it not as impressed as I thought I might be because it just felt a little bit derivative. But it's a really cool mashup, and it won the Best Board Game Award at Origin, so I think it's going to get a lot more play and a lot more buzz in the coming year. Anyway, so there's other stuff that they awarded out in the Origins Awards, including the Best Children's Game, which is a game called Three Little Pigs, which sounds really fun. I mean, I don't have kids, but it literally involves you blowing stuff down, you know, producing air from your mouth and blowing things over, which you know, kids dig, and a lot of best historical game, all these categories. So keep an eye out for those if you're thinking about board games for the coming year. Did you guys have any questions or issues you wanted to talk about with the Tabletop Time?
I want to know.
I'm sorry.
I want to know, like, converting people. So, you know, I was in Wyoming family reunion, and my wife's side of the family, they play lots of tabletop games, but mostly traditional games. And the few times that I've tried to, you know, some of the games you recommended and that Amanda and I might own, recommend them, the biggest hurdle is no. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
The argument that Monopoly sucks, but everyone plays it. And, you know, if you like a game, that's great, but like, I don't enjoy the, I don't know, what do you call them? What do you call those kids, the board games you all grew up on, whatever those are? Dumb?
Ameritrash.
Like, I don't enjoy most of those. Sometimes they can be fun, you know, with a group of friends or whatever, because that's what you're doing. But it's like, they're almost very comfortable in it. And I think that exists, and I could be wrong, but my hypothesis is that exists much more in that world than it does a video game world, where if I have a friend that's a gamer, it's not hard for me to say, oh dude, you got to check out Destiny. I'll bring it over and we'll play. And they'll be like, awesome.
But it didn't used to be that way. I mean, I think Garnet could probably remember when I was growing up, I had that exact problem. In fact, I used to write reviews of games in the newspaper when I was 14 years old. And it was like an advertisement to beat me up. It was like only nerds played
computer
games. So, I mean, these things change.
Yeah, well, I guess what I'm saying is I feel like people that play board games or traditional board games, it's not that they think you're a nerd for liking Euro games or whatever. It's just I feel like people become very entrenched in their game. Maybe it's true. Video games are like this too, where it's like I'm a WoW player, I'm a Call of Duty player. So maybe I'm picking apart my own argument. But, you know, I find a lot of people that play games, tabletop games, have the one or two they like and aren't interested in trying new ones the way you are. And that, I guess, relates to me personally, and that's how my in-laws are. It's like they're just not interested in any other type of game, yet they love board games.
Well, that's why we talk a lot about, in the sort of board game community, we talk a lot about gateway games, because these are games that you can bring out that are really easy to teach. You can explain them very quickly. They're accessible. They don't usually involve, you know, real geeky concepts right away. And they have themes that people can relate to and understand. And yet when they play them, people go, oh my gosh, board games can be like this. You know, the poster child for this is Ticket to Ride. Ticket to Ride is a game I've used over and over and over again to introduce people to the board gaming hobby. It plays well from two players all the way up to, what, five, I think is what it supports. It's cutthroat and ruthless, but easily accessible and easy to teach. So there's a whole number of these gateway games that people talk about as ways to go, I mean, just give me a chance here. I promise you won't be bored. Just give me a shot and let me explain this to you, this quick game. If you like it, fine, great. If you don't like it, we won't play it again. And you know, that's what a lot of people in the board gaming community try to do, to just get people to give it a shot, you know?
And kudos to people like you and like them out there that are ambassadors for that. It's just, I guess I do that with like video games or comedy or other pop media where it's just like exhausting to take on another one of those things, because then someone will be, oh yeah, okay, that's great. Do you know what else? You should try Boggle. Let's get Boggle out here. You got it. You're going to love it. And it's just, I don't have the energy to be a tastemaker in board games with my family.
Yeah. But I mean, I think, you know, even you guys, when we sat down and played Lords of Waterdeep, which I would argue is another of those gateway games, I think you guys all kind of saw, oh, there's these mechanics going on in that game that are taken much further in other games. But here it's accessible. It's easy to wrap your head around, and you start going, oh yeah, there's strategies here that are really fun and nothing like what people consider traditionally board games, you know, nothing like these roll and move kind of boring Candyland, Parcheesi, you know, sorry, I'm going to get you, whatever. Those awful, awful games we all grew up with. So I think once you get exposed to it, you kind of recognize if you, you know, and if you don't like it, fine. But if people get exposed to it in the right way, it can really catch on.
Oh yeah, no, Amanda and I are totally down to have you be our board game tastemaker. Like 100%. I just won't be able to carry that torch any further. You'll convert two people and just know that the flame will die then. And I think we might have lost Garnet to football.
Oh, did we? Oh, is the USA playing Ghana right now? This is this just in.
You know, I've been listening. I'm good. I'm here. I just, you know, here's my thing with board games is I enjoy playing board games every time I sit down and play with you, Jeff, and we get together a great group and play. And I don't feel like I have the friend network of folks who come in a regular place, you know, come to my place in a regular amount of time, or that I go and see in a regular amount of time to get pulled further into it. And it's also sort of like another competition for time. And my first choice for my entertainment time is always video games.
Yeah, well, that's fair. I'm very interested to see.
Although I loved Lords of Waterdeep. That was so awesome.
Right? Yeah.
I think that's what
people say is like, yeah, I don't really want to do that. And then when you do it, it's like, oh my God, that was really, really awesome. It's like, well, yeah, there's lots more where that came from. But I'm also very interested to see what Hearthstone can do. I think people that would never have ever played a traditional card game or a trading card game, I think it might convert people to venture into a gaming store. I'm certainly hopeful it does, but
and then venture into a bankruptcy attorney's office.
Yeah, exactly. That's the other problem as well. Anyway, well, that's pretty much all we have time for today. Also, I'm going to go and hack up a lung. I apologize for all the coughing on this episode, everybody.
I hope you feel better soon.
Thank you. We do have one person on the line that has been waiting an awful long time. So maybe we should take a quick call and see if we can help somebody out on their issue. From the 971 area code, you are on DLC. Whoop. Maybe not.
Hey, sounds like... my name's Brian. I'm from Portland, Oregon. And my
Brian.
Thing is, I just wanted to say, about an E3 that you did on the second day. You mentioned how you love how Microsoft did this year's convention instead of last year's, and you hated last year's. Well, my argument would be is it's a brand new console, and we know there's going to be games, but not for a little while. So what I wanted to hear was all the new features about the console. So to me, last year's E3 was great for Microsoft then. And I also wanted to say I love your guys' show because I work 6 hours a day and all I pretty much get to do is listen to stuff. So having your show to listen to every week is very refreshing and nice change from the music.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate that. We want to talk about that real quick, Garnet. What do you think? The Microsoft just showing all games, maybe short shrifted some features of the console, and at least, I mean, they didn't speak about any of that stuff. I have a feeling that you liked that, but did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure. I mean, I think that I get that as a expectation for these sort of press conferences, because we've been ingrained with seeing them for so many years do that, that it felt different to have this presentation But I think that they absolutely hit on all cylinders with what they needed to execute on this year, which was to reassert that they are Xbox, the game console, and not Xbox, the something else you can use underneath your television as a smart streaming box, cable interface, TV guide, DVR, blah, 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 blah. It was very carefully constructed to say we are a gaming platform. And I think another reason that they had so many multi-platform titles is that they were really reasserting that, by the way, if you haven't bought a next-gen console yet, you have nothing to worry about with Xbox One, because all of these big multi-platform titles you want to play, they are coming to Xbox One. You know, it's almost as if they had to really get back into the game of being a game console. And I think they really executed on that. And they showed some stuff that's a ways out. You know, they did what they needed to there. They didn't have, I don't think, as high a highs as PlayStation, but they had such a, you know, hour and a half of game to game to game to game. And the talking that they did was still very genuinely about games. It was developers and folks just saying, hey, here's my favorite game or my favorite character. And that it had a real authentic feel to it. So, you know, I did not miss that stuff. Those sort of bullet point feature lists, all that kind of stuff, I can get a PR email and be perfectly satisfied.
Yeah. Yeah, very cool. Let's try to fit in one more call here. We got 720 on the line. What is your name? Where are you calling from? What do you want to talk about?
Hey, thanks, guys. My name is Jeff. I'm from Rochester, New York. I was just curious what you guys' thoughts are on the usefulness of E3 going forward. You know, me sitting at home on the East Coast here, never been to an E3 before, I can digest a ton of information through the streams that they provide and just general releases of trailers and stuff that they give out. So I'm wondering if, you know, what kind of cost effectiveness these companies are still getting from doing these huge conferences and everything, and if it's still really, really an effective way to deliver their message.
It's a great question. Certainly Nintendo has made the decision to approach E3 in a much different way than ever before. And we know that E3 grew out of a very different kind of thing. It was an attempt, or it was a way of reaching out to store owners to know what all the kids were going to be excited about at the holiday season and what they should stock. And that has become pretty superfluous at this point with the way in these industries disseminate information. It's not, you don't need to, you know, take the temperature of the media in the same way. And you certainly don't need to put in your orders in the same way and design your holiday season in the same way, especially with digital distribution of games, being more and more prevalent. Christian, what do you think about this?
I mean, I think E3 is still very much relevant, and I'll keep going back to saying that it's the pep rally for video games. You know, I think it can continue to tweak the formula. I think Nintendo has proven that going digital works in a large way with what they've done. I think their Nintendo Direct was effective, but it was also effective because it was this digital event was different than some of their others, right? They very much played it like a press conference. They played up to the fact that they weren't doing a press conference, and, you know, it fit within that world. And then those Treehouse live streams were great, but they were also on the show floor. And I think that had some of that excitement of being there live on the show floor played. And then they also had all these games for people to play, where you and I and Garnet were talking about the games that we got hands-on with. And, you know, it's this big event where a lot of people in the industry get together and experience what's new, what's next, and what's coming. I do think the formula could use some tweaking. I don't think the Santa Monica approach is necessarily the right one, but it is weird. And I think Garnet, I know you've talked about this, and Jeff, you've probably brought it up too, where it's like the whole thing is an industry event, but then it's definitely, there's like a mini cast system when you're in there in terms of like what level of industry you are. Okay, you got onto the show floor. Now you can wait in a 2-hour line. Okay, you got onto the show floor, but you better be here at 9 a.m. if you want to see Morpheus, because you have to wait in a 2-hour line to get a ticket to come back the next day. Okay, congratulations. Here's your appointments for everything. You can walk right in. Okay, congratulations. Here's your appointments for the things that are in hotels that aren't there that are really coming out. By the way, don't talk about this until August, but we're going to show it to you now. By the way, here's the PS5, right? Like, and then it's like no kids are allowed, and there are tons of kids, not tons, but I saw more than 15 you know, 10-year-old-ish age kids running around the show floor where things are getting worked out. The Hardline interactive experience booth was just, what a disaster. Like, it's so, you go in, they force you onto your Facebook feed and then like take your picture with stupid stuff and do things before they show you the demo. It's like, if this is an industry thing.
I'm so glad I didn't, you're kidding me, right?
Yeah, it was a mess.
I would have walked out of that. I would have been like, no, I am not here to market your game for you.
Yeah, and then you get to play it and have hands-on and see this thing, but it's just like, this is an industry thing. I'm not here to give you access. And so I think there are tweaks, but I think it's still important, and I think it will stay relevant, but I'd like to see it continue to evolve, which, by the way, showed really well at E3.
Yeah, most telling insanity of all that E3 stuff was EA having all of the sports games behind plexiglass where you couldn't get to them.
Yeah.
Unless you stood in line and got the indoctrination speech. It's like, wait, it's sports games, folks. Hello.
And we're not,
this is an industry event.
We're not, yeah, we're not fans, quote unquote. I mean, we are, but you know, it's weird. It's not PAX. It's not GDC. It's weird. It needs to figure it out.
I would put a little bit of the onus on, there's certainly a contingent of attendees at E3 that behave in a way that isn't a professional trade show environment way, they're notorious for trying to crack down and not allow certain people into the show, whatever. And I'm not trying to say, oh, elitist, but there is definitely a group of people there that you see all the time that are behaving as if this were some kind of, I don't know, rock concert, and are running around and pestering the people there for swag and it's, I don't know, there is a contingent of attendees that don't seem to be there to get any work done or get actual information about games, but are just there to sort of go crazy. So I hate to be the bah humbug of it all, but I don't know, there does need to be a little bit of a wall between that kind of stuff and people who are actually trying to get work done, I think.
No disagreement whatsoever. And then, like, I love it. There's so many farces. There was the farce of them checking IDs as you came into convention halls.
Ridiculous.
Which was just nonsense.
Yeah. Ridiculous. Anyway, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you, Garnet, for stepping in at the last minute and being on the show. Congratulations on your 5-timer award.
Glad to be here.
So it couldn't have been anybody else to be the first 5-timer, and we can't wait to have you back again and again. Tell people where to find your stuff in the meantime.
Yeah, well, people out there are probably like, would you stop screwing around and make the next Garnet on Games? I apologize. I owe you guys a Garnet on Games. I owe many Garnet on Games. I had some stuff come up over the weekend that occupied a good bit of time. I'm going to be on the Smoking Tire this evening, so I already have some time committed there as well. But hey, I will get those shows done as well. I have a mountain of calls to go through. I will get through all of them. I will get them out. You know how to find me. It's at Garnet Lee on Twitter. The show is Garnet on Games. You guys are awesome. Love you.
Christian, how about you? What's going on this week?
Tomorrow or today, depending on Tuesday, is the next live show, recording and stand-up show, What's New? I do at Nerd Melt here in Los Angeles, and you can find that. It's a monthly podcast. It's What's New with Christian Spicer. It's on the Nerdist Network. It's me and 3 stand-up comics do new material in front of a live audience, and sometimes it hits, sometimes it doesn't, but you really get to see how the sausage is made. I'm really proud of the show. And then we all sit down and talk about what worked, what didn't, how we write, what's different for writing for stand-up versus writing for TV. And it's with stand-ups that you should know or do know. And like I said, I'm really proud of it. Check that out. And then the other show that I do is called Improv versus Stand-Up. It's at UCB in Los Angeles once a month and also at UCB in New York City once a month. And I will be in New York City June 25th through June 29th doing one of the Improv versus Stand-Ups out there. And we're also doing it again as part of the awesome festival, the Del Close Marathon. And then I'll be doing a bunch of stand-up while I'm out there as well. And again, I said it at the last E3 Daily Show. Thank you guys so much for listening and for the reviews. If you can take a minute and leave a review on iTunes, tell your friend about the show. We really appreciate it. You guys have been awesome. And thanks so much for the calls and the tweets and all the feedback you guys have given on the show. It's humbling. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I will second that. It was a lot of fun doing those daily shows, and thanks everybody who hung out and listened and have downloaded the show. And thank you this week for putting up with my very tired voice and coughing. Such kind of thing that happens when you kill yourself going to E3. And then I flew to Milwaukee, and it was quite the week, but very fun. And thanks to everybody who enjoyed those shows. But we're back to our Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time schedule. So if you just are listening to the show from those E3 episodes, hang out with us every Monday. If you can check out the show live, we are every Monday, 11 a.m. Pacific time. And also, hey, if you like audiobooks, why not check out my audiobook? I narrated an audiobook, and I promise I was not sick voice when I did it. I'm really proud of it. Over 35 different voices, aliens and humans. It's a sci-fi book about first contact with aliens, but told from the aliens' point of view. It's called Traveling in Space by Stephen Paul Leyva, and it's available on audible.com and on iTunes. So check that out. I have been getting such amazing feedback from people that have listened to it. It's a really fun story. I'm quite proud of it. That'll do it for this show. Thanks a lot for listening. Until next week, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.